It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right. I've decided one of my favorite things in the world is how back in the day on TV shows, they would have the same actor guest star as multiple characters on different episodes. And they usually just did it with like small time people that weren't a big deal. But like just before we started recording this, I watched an episode of Murder, She Wrote. And in the episode, John Hillerman was in it. Not playing Higgins from Magnum PI, but not doing a normal, like he still had his British voice. At best, it was like a mid-Atlantic voice.
Okay.
And I know for a fact that there was a Magnum crossover with Murder, She Wrote, and Higgins was in it.
Oh.
So, that's weird. But it happened a lot back in the day. I don't know that it happens nowadays. I think people are too cautious about that.
I think I saw somewhere that, you know, the Jack Webb shows were all supposed to be taking place in the same universe. Dragnet and Emergency and Adam 12. And I think I read somewhere that the guy who played one of the policemen in Adam 12, or maybe it was one of the guys in Emergency, I don't remember, had been in Dragnet as like just a regular person or something. that happened. But yeah, that kind of thing did happen sometimes. That's right.
But I tell a lie, it does happen nowadays. I just realized. So last season of Community, they changed a lot of things around because, you know, when a show goes on and long enough, they're like, what the hell do you want? And they change around. And among other things, they brought in a couple new characters. And one was played by Padgett Brewster. And yeah. I think she was like an efficiency expert or something, but then they like decided to keep her around. I don't exactly remember, but she was tired as a consultant of some sort. And then they kept her on after that. The very season right before that, she was like the head of IT for one episode.
Oh.
So for a second, I was like, is that character? No, it wasn't. Yeah. So I guess they still do it. I'd find it funny. I don't know. I'm weird that way. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world where I forgot to take an allergy pill this morning. So get used to that. It's really been bad. Between the allergies outside and all the cleaning I do, which is just throwing up allergens, cat dander, all that jazz. Anyway, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 499.
I assume there was some sort of audio lag, but it totally looked like you didn't remember what your line was.
Oh, no, I said it. 499.
Yeah, and in 2 days' time. What happens in 2 days' time?
We will record the 500th episode, but it still won't be up until next Thursday.
Yes, but we'll record it. I'm very excited for that. We're going to have way too many people on that. Zoom's probably going to be a disaster. It'll be great.
Or if you prefer, you can see it as the Zoom reunion episode of
Oddcast. Of Oddcast, yes.
Yeah.
The Oddcast reunion, yes.
Everybody's coming back.
Everybody. Not just the two of us, you know.
No, all the cast, some bit players.
lots of some one-offs, because, you know, they're yeah. they're cheap to get.
Yeah, everybody's coming back.
Not the ones that died, obviously, but.
Oh yeah, not those ones.
That's a thing getting older. Well, I've talked about this before. The older you get, more people die. And obviously it's a thing with like your friends and loved ones. But it's also like your favorite actors and singers and shit. Like more and more of those die. And now I'm just recently getting into this thing where I'm watching movies and I'm like, oh crap, that guy's dead. But like fairly recent movies, because it'll be like a couple years old and they died last year or something. So that's been weird.
I wonder if that's been different for me as it is for a lot of other people, because when I was young, I watched so many old movies that I've been experiencing actors that I love, you know, passing away and me being sad about it forever. You know, I was sad.
Maybe so. Because I mean, there's a lot of movies that I saw that person had already been dead for a while or whatever. Like, that's not weird to me. It's not particularly weird for me to see Patrick Swayze in a movie, because he'd been dead a while. But like, well, when I watched Only Lovers Left Alive and it had Anton Yelchin and John Hurt, like that was weird to me, because I'm like, this movie is recent, but both of these guys are dead.
Yeah.
And one of them was in his 20s.
Well, just yesterday, actually, my wife and I were, you know, looking for things to watch, and the original Poltergeist came up as something to watch, but the little girl in that had passed away when she was like 12.
Yeah.
Back in 1988, and I don't think it comes up a lot. I mean, I remember when Cary Grant died. I remember when Jimmy Stewart died. I remember. But you're right. If I see a Cary Grant movie, it often doesn't pop up into my head, oh, he's dead now. You know, I don't really think about that. But Poltergeist was the example of a movie that is sort of oldish, but it's still really tragic to think about this little girl having passed away when she was 12. And
especially because somehow Craig T. Nelson is still alive. That doesn't seem fair.
That doesn't seem fair. That's
good. I mean, for starters, Coach was not a good show, and second of all, I've seen him in interviews and he's turned into a right-wing asshole, so fuck that guy.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's not very good at it. He talks about how he never had any help, and even when he was really poor and he was living on almost no money and he was living on welfare and on food stamps and he didn't have any help.
Does he really say that?
He does. Yeah, back when they still had the soup, it was good enough they did a clip of that. I am so excited, because you know what today is?
Podcast day?
We got such a lag today. It is the first Thursday after they posted the final episode of Series 7 of Taskmaster on YouTube. They post a new episode every Thursday, but I was concerned because they finished Series 7, but Series 8 and 9 licensed in the US right now. CW licensed them. And I already also bought 8 off of Amazon because I could do that now. So I was like, what are they going to do? Are they going to do nothing? Or are they just going to do like Season 8 and then I can't see it in my country, because that happens sometimes? But you know what they did instead?
No.
They posted episode 1 of the Champion of Champions series, which I had only heard about and not got to see. After Series 5, they did a series before Series 6 that was the 5 contestants were the 5 winners from the previous 5 series. So not only is it ones I haven't seen before, but it's got 5 of my favorite people, because the people who won the first 5 series are people I all really like. Bob Mortimer, Noel Fielding, Rob Beckett, Josh Whitcomb, and Catherine Ryan. So it's awesome. Seriously, I love that show. I fucking love that show. I rewatch it. Like, Trish is so sick of it because I'll just rewatch episodes all the time. Anyway, for those of you just joining us, wait till next episode. It's going to get real crazy. Here's how this thing works. We have a hat. It is magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Peoples like yourselves, good people. A lot of people who have been helping out lately, and we appreciate that very much. I'm into pointing today for some reason. People, write into that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat magically, on its own, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's probably too old and untalented to be doing this as long as we have been. Servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That is the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which is most of it.
And if you're wondering where this magic hat came from and how we ended up with it, Vectron only knows.
Vectron only knows. By Vectron's beard, we found this hat. By Vectron's kindly claw. That's still my favorite.
Yeah, that's my favorite too. Kindly claw.
Mitchell and Webb is some of the best sketch comedy ever. It's really good. I am watching another one right now that I would like to recommend to people on Netflix called Astronomy Club. And Kenya Barris was EP on it. It's an 8-person all black sketch comedy troupe. And it's pretty good. It's not like my favorite for that kind of thing is the Black Lady sketch show on HBO. That thing's hilarious. With Robin Thede ran that one, and that one is really good. But this one is also quite good. I've been enjoying it when I'm not watching reruns of Murder, She Wrote. They're very soothing. I like watching old shows just to see like how they thought things were done back then. It's very interesting. And to see a bunch of actors that I'm like, oh, they wanted to actually do things.
We've watched a couple of Joe Pera things, actually.
Is she coming around? Is your wife coming around about Joe Pera?
Yeah, I think. And the one with the Jack Lantern and putting it in.
Yes. Why make him so goddamn scared.
Yeah, that. I think she really liked that one.
That one is a good one. It might be my second favorite. And my favorite is always Talks You to Sleep, the one where he can't sleep in the middle of the night. Hmm. And he talks about his favorite sounds and things like that. I love that one, and it's so soothing. But the Jack-O-Lantern one is good.
I was kind of surprised that when he, the hot apple thing, I thought
warm apple. Warm apple.
Sorry, warm apple. I thought for sure she, because we do have some apples here. I thought for sure she'd like try to do that right away.
Warm apple night. It's warm apple night. Warm apple night. Warm apple night. Yeah, what it has really done is really made me want to go to Marquette, Wisconsin sometime. Because that's a real city. Marquette, Michigan. Sorry, Michigan.
Yeah.
Michigan. Sorry. For reasons I've never been clear on, I always mix those two up. And I have Wisconsin on the brain right now. So coming up in two weeks from this coming Saturday, my wife is leaving me. For quite a while. So, a little while back, my sister-in-law, the youngest one, the one who lives by herself and who we tend to hang out with the most, we spend a lot of time with her doing things. She says to us, I need to get out for a while. I'm going to rent a cabin up by the Great Lakes somewhere. You guys are welcome to come with me. And Trish is like, is this a terrible idea? You know, COVID and all this stuff. And I was like, no, it depends on how you do it. Because there are things we have skipped already this, you know, the summer vacation thing and all that. We skipped that because we would have had to fly and that was terrible. And even once we got there, people were going to the store every day and we were seeing other families. And, you know, there was a lot of possible contamination. But I was like, this one, if we go to a cabin with her, we're risking ourselves getting infected from the other. And that's on us. And if we're willing to accept that risk, then we're willing to accept that risk. After that, as long as we stay there and don't like go to the store and like bring all the food in with us or whatever, and just stay out there with her for 14 days, we're good. So that's what we decided to do. But after some discussion, there's a few different reasons, but the primary one is somebody's got to take care of the cats. So I'm going to stay here. And so, yeah, so Trish and her sister are going to be, so I'm going to be on my own for 2 weeks, which is going to be interesting because I don't got a job no more and we're in the middle of a pandemic. So I'm going to be on my own for 2 weeks. So I'm already trying to come. I mean, I think it'll be fun for a while. And honestly, I've been cooped up here with my wife. I think, you know, having things to myself will be cool a little bit, but it'll get old. And I've already got stuff set up. Like I'm already contacting people like, hey, let's have a nice socially distanced get together. Cause I'll be starved for human attention. So we'll see how that goes, but it'll be a little bit of a vacation for me. Like I have to keep up on, you know, laundry and dishes and stuff like that. I still got to go to the gym and all that, but I think I'm going to give myself a little bit of a break, sit around, watch crappy movies, play video games a bunch. I got my crazy cereal coming.
Crazy cereal?
I think I've talked about it before. Magic Spoon cereal.
I don't
the remember. Ultimate in affluent man-child white privilege. Magic Spoon cereal. That's not how they brand themselves. But that's what it is. So there's this company in Brooklyn, because of course, that makes cereal that nutritionally is keto friendly, is ridiculously low carb, is very high protein, all this kind of stuff, and is made to appear and taste like children's sugar cereal. So like they've got a chocolate flavor and they've got fruity ones and they got frosted ones and stuff like that. And yeah, I think it's like 2 grams of carbs net per bowl. And it's made largely with whey protein. So like it's very high protein. It's like what you eat if you're going to be weightlifting kind of thing. But then of course the catch being, you can only be shipped to you. It's not sold in stores. You have to buy it in packs of 4 boxes and it costs about $10 a box.
I mean, isn't there a lot of sugar in it?
No. Those would be carbs. No, it's done with a combination of, I think, monk fruit and stevia and something else. They've come up with some things. So the carb level is really, the sugar level entirely is very low. And I imagine it's not going to taste the same in the same way that, you know, they make protein bars that like this is chocolate donut flavored and it doesn't taste like a chocolate donut, but it tastes chocolatey and sweet and I like it. So, you know, we'll see. And this isn't something I intend to do all the time. I had heard about it a while ago and I think I talked about it on here a while back, but I hadn't gotten around to do anything. And then I was watching a YouTube channel and their sponsor was Magic Spoon. And so there was like a deal where you got free shipping because beyond that cost, you got to pay shipping. And so I was like, what the heck? I'll go buy some. Because I love cereal, but I basically can't ever eat cereal. Because if you're diabetic, cereal is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
It's like the most unhelpful kind of food. Let's put a lot of flour and sugar.
Yeah, usually. Yeah.
That'll be good. But yeah, so that'll be a fun treat for me. My speaking of my diabetes, I'm doing good. This new medicine is pretty awesome.
Good.
My blood sugar is dropping, and in addition to it dropping because of the medicine is also literally making me less hungry. Like when I eat stuff, I get full faster. So my numbers lately have been great. I've been very happy about that. And I'm still doing the gym 5 days a week and everything. So that's all been pretty nice.
Good.
How's your week been? How's your diabetes?
My diabetes is great.
Sweet.
It's practically non-existent.
Mm-hmm. In a very real and practical sense, it is non-existent.
I really wish you wouldn't compliment my diabetes status with the word sweet. I mean, I find that very offensive.
That is a good point. I meant it artificially.
Oh, okay. Let's see. What's been going on? It seems like everything we're watching is just filler to get to Bly Manor tomorrow, because like nothing is really good right now. The last episode of Lovecraft Country was okay. It's good.
I only finally saw that last night.
Yeah, wasn't bad.
It was interesting because certain parts of it where the show has not been near the book for a while, certain parts of it went to the book again, but then other parts really didn't. I did think it was funny though. So in this episode, they talk about a book called Lovecraft Country that's sort of from an alternate perspective. And they talk about how the book is the same story as what they're living, except for certain key differences.
Right.
The differences they named are all actual differences between the TV show and the book, except for the final one. That's the one they're acting on. That doesn't happen. But all the just like offhand ones they mentioned are real.
Yeah.
So that was a fun sort of homage. Yeah. I have very conflicted feelings about that show, but I think it's because it deals with really conflictive issues. Like it's taking on some serious shit, and there's not a way for some of it not to resonate with me. And other parts of it do, and I love it for that. But I mean, if you're going to take a stand on big issues to this degree, like some of the stuff's going to work for you and some of the stuff isn't. And I respect that. I respect what they're doing. Go ahead.
I was going to ask, did the last episode of Raised by Wolves air? Did we talk about that already?
I don't know. We don't need too much. That show sucks. The show was dumb as hell. I mean,
I didn't like it.
A season saying, hey, do you want to know what's going on? You have no clue, do you? Look at this. This is weird. You still have no idea what's going on. And then ended the season being like, nope, you still don't. Maybe next season we'll tell you. And I'm like, fuck you. This is like shit like Lost did. Like, if you take a season and don't answer anything and you want me to just sit there for a season soaking up confusion to then answer it later, I'm not sticking around.
Yeah.
I'm definitely done with them.
That's kind of how I felt about it, too. I saw a review from one critic who really liked it. And the reason this person liked it so much is they were going on and on about all of the sort of religious, you know, biblical allusions in it, like they were so great. And I remember thinking, they seem pretty pedestrian to me. I mean, there's, you know, this is stuff.
I found it funny because we never explicitly call it. Technically, it's not Christianity. I mean, because we don't mention Jesus or anything ever. But a lot of their gospel is word for word from the Bible in some cases. And I find that weird.
Well, I mean, this critic was talking about what I was referring to were things like, you know, how mother and father seemed to be like an Adam and Eve, and how, you know,
super intentional, but who the fuck cares?
Seem to be like Cain and Abel. Well, this critic didn't mention Cain and Abel, but I noticed this. I mean, all of the stuff that seemed to be alluding to the Bible, in particular the Torah or whatever. It's like, I can see all these things. Okay. And the fact that, the fact that when she's in necromancer mode, she looks like she's, it looks like a crucifix or whatever. Yeah, I get it. All of these religious and biblical allusions. And then yes, also all of this stuff that came up when they, with the religious people in the show and how similar their religion was to Christianity or whatever, all of that. Yep. I get it. But why?
But you also need a story in there and like a
plot. That's exactly right. This person who likes the show so much was just, I think they were impressed with, I think they felt like they were in on the.
It's a factor. Like, imagine you watch The Haunting of Hill House and we really liked how we found out there's like all sorts of ghosts hidden in the background and stuff. Now imagine that was still true, but the actual story of the show had been shit.
Right.
Like, that would still be a cool feature. It would not have made Haunting of Hill House good.
Well, I think that shows like Lost and this show, Raised by Wolves, I think a lot of people end up liking shows like that because they think they're seeing something in it that other people aren't, and it makes them feel clever or something. I don't know. I mean,
there's a Da Vinci Code vibe to it in that we hide something from you and then we show it and we're like, oh my God, it's a big reveal. No, it's not. You just hit it behind your back for a second and it's just a normal thing.
Well,
but makes also people feel smart.
Well, if they've, but even like Lost didn't reveal anything. It just gave people an impetus and an encouragement to come up with theories, all these theories that people have. And the act of making a theory, regardless of whether or not it ties in any way to the actual show or is ever proven or disproven, just the act of making one makes some people feel very, I don't know, creative or clever or something, especially if they get other people to hear it and approve of it.
Yeah, and I've got theories about Raised by Wolves, although my primary theory is that they don't know and they're just making up as they go along, like Lost. But I've got theories, so after season 2 airs, whenever that happens, I'll totally go on a wiki and see if I was right. Like, don't get me wrong, I definitely will look up what the fuck they were doing. I just refuse to sit through 8 more hours of TV for it. Also, you know how you were really annoyed right off the bat for like the heteronormative vibe to it?
Yeah.
When you said that originally, it was a William thing. I'm like, you're right, but it's there, but it's not a big deal. And then like, as soon as you talked about it, it got like, I don't know if my perspective changed or it got worse, but holy shit. By the end, I was just like, this is dumb. Like, this would be dumb if you weren't androids. And it's really dumb because you are.
Well, I also wanted to mention, in preparation for Bly Manor tomorrow, we went ahead and watched Hill House again.
All 10 episodes, dang.
Yeah. I'd love to,
but I don't have that kind of
power. The rewatchability of it was great. There was a lot of things that we appreciated about it a second time through that we didn't necessarily the first time. And what I realized before we even watched it, I realized that really what Hill House was, and maybe this was the pitch, I don't know, or it seems to have been the original idea, was the television series Hill House was a combination of Shirley Jackson's original book and Turning of the Screw, and kind of combining those two things.
Right.
Because the framing device of Turn of the Screw was someone was going to tell a ghost story, right? Which ends up being the story in the book. And the person says, this story is a turn of the screw because it's going to be like a regular ghost story, except there's going to be kids involved. So if you think a regular ghost story is scary and horrifying, imagine if there's, you know, if the subjects of the haunting and whatever else is going on is children. Oh my gosh, that's even going to be.
Children are scary.
Well, but that's kind of what they did with Hill House. They said, what if we take the story of Hill House, but we add an element where we get to see how the characters in Hill House came to be from their childhood. And of course, the easiest thing to do that is just to make them all related and come from the same family and maybe have them have an experience with the house when they're young. I mean, when I, for example, think of taking those two stories and combining them some way, I come up with something very similar to what they actually made. So I wondered and the fact that their next installment is going to be actually about Bly Manor makes me think maybe that was the whole pitch behind Hill House, was let's take two stories and combine them.
Yeah, which means Haunting of Bly Manor is going to be part Turn of the Screw and part whatever the hell they're doing for season 3.
Or it could be, again, a combination of Hill House and Turn of the Screw, except from more of a lens of Turn of the Screw than Hill House, right? Like, let's do the same project, except let's do it more from the other.
I hope it is something like that for the sake of nerds like you. Because it helps you get more enjoyment out of it. And
I can imagine that would be a cool thing, whatever it is. Although I like your idea.
I believe you can.
I like your idea too, that if they have an idea of what the third one would be, that maybe it's like, well, let's combine those two things.
And that was just a joke. So imagine how cool it would be if I thought of real stuff.
I don't know what a third thing would be, though, if they were going to focus on a house, right?
The haunting of that annoying fake Versailles place that those rich people built in Florida.
But do you know what would be cool? So I don't know if you know this, or I don't know if we've talked about this, but I've read in various places, so I suspect it's true, that when they were going to build the first haunted mansion in Disneyland, they had a couple people working on the design of it and the story.
And some wanted it really scary and some wanted it goofy scary. Yes, you have talked about this. Well, because every time you talk about this, I bring up Cory Doctorow's novel. Cory Doctorow's first novel, the one that's the sci-fi one, and in the future the economy is reputation based and they have warring cliques trying to redesign Disney's Haunted Mansion.
Oh yeah, right. But anyway, the scary story
is what happens when you do for 500 episodes, people.
the scary story they wanted to come up with that they never did and that nobody knows would actually
even William.
Well, I mean, I know a little bit about it because I've seen these things, but it'd be fun to maybe do a story based on that. That would be interesting.
The Haunting of Disney World.
I think
did you ever see Escape from Tomorrowland?
No.
You know about Escape from Tomorrowland?
I think you might have mentioned it before. But the mansion that I think they made in Disneyland or maybe the one in Disney World is this, I don't remember, I think is technically supposed to be in New Orleans. So the story would take place in New Orleans if they did it.
Hmm. Well, yeah, and I think they're two different mansions.
Yeah, they are.
And to be fair, there has been a Haunted Mansion movie already.
Right, so I'm not suggesting they should do a Disney Haunted Mansion movie based on, I mean, that would be cool if they did, but I'm saying they could borrow that story and not have it connected with Disney or Disney-like stuff at all, and it would just be their thing, because they could do that. I mean, it's not like Disney has told that story. Not really.
Yeah.
But I think it would be an interesting story to tell. But anyway, that's mostly what we've been doing, is just trying to watch stuff to entertain ourselves until
I think we're going to have to wait till Trish comes back to watch Bly Manor, because I don't think we'll be able to finish it in time in 2 weeks. The 2 weeks for 10-hour-long episodes, that's a bit much for us. So we may have to wait till she gets back, which kind of sucks. But
what about your week?
Not a bunch that's interesting. I finally started writing that short story idea I had, and it is not clicking, so...
Oh, really? Why not?
About that. I don't know. It's just when it sounds way better in my head and I write it down. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, I hate when that happens.
So we'll see. And it's one of those where I've got the I had an opening line and I have an ending result, but it's like there's a lot of shit in between there that I kind of haven't thought of yet. So we'll see. It's also in a very specific tone. It's also first person, but it's in a very specific, odd sort of tone, and I'm not sure I can hold that tone. I don't know. We'll see.
What kind of tone?
It's a bit stilted. It's a bit. It a bit comes off as a monologue from like a colonial era or something. There's and it's supposed to essentially be somebody telling a story for lack of going into too much detail, in an interrogation room. And it is, I do essentially want it to be such that it doesn't have a time or place attached, but yeah, the language is weird. The language is just how I originally saw it in my head. Actually, maybe that's the key. Maybe I ditch the language and just go with the story and see what that does. We'll see. We're about to switch games with my gaming group. We just finished what we were doing. It kind of died out because we were all kind of tired. So now we're going to switch to Agent Stars, which is a gumshoe system-based game where in a picture the Galactic Federation. Now imagine the Galactic Federation had a huge war that almost wiped it out with some weird unknown species. And then something happened and the war was over, but something weird happened and nobody can remember exactly how it ended or what the enemy was like, but they're just gone now. And so the whole Federation is broken up and they're trying to fix it and everything. It's only been 7 years though. And way on the edge of it, you play a spaceship crew that are basically mercenary law enforcers. And you just go to places that the government tells you and try and act as the government, but you're being paid by contract to do it. And it's supposed to have themes of like idealism and corruption and things like that, because you go to places and, you know, maybe you can uphold the ideals of the Federation that have existed all this time. Or maybe since everything's crazy now, you can, you know, find ways to enhance things for yourself against the cost of justice and all that.
So like Pinkertons?
It'll be fun. Kinda. But it's very much in a recently messed up empire that is trying to get itself back together, but it was like a cool empire, not like a weird tyrannical thing. The author talks about it. it's like the Star Trek world, but then if that society started to crumble. And so like, yeah, it was a whole society that had done away with currency, but now it suddenly had to come up with currency again because we now have scarcity of resources again and things like that. So I think it'll be fun. We'll see. I'm really excited to try out the gumshoe system. I've been wanting to do that for a while. So I'm sorry.
I was going to ask, what's the relevance of not being able to really remember how everything happened or why?
I don't know. It's just a thing they throw in there. You don't really remember, like something happened and it threw everybody, like nobody remembers exactly what happened at the end or what exactly the bad guys were. And it's just a mystery. And the game doesn't, like, it's not hidden in this GM part secretly what it is. It's just stuff to throw out there. It's very much to be, here's a snapshot of what the game world looks like, and now you do what you want with it. But among other things, one of the seven playable races involved were these omniscient beings without body or life or anything, and just these immortal, near godlike creatures. And something happened, and now they've been reduced to actual mortal bodies, albeit ones with tremendous psychic power. And they're all desperate to try and get back to their former immortal omniscient selves. But I don't know, he just threw it in there. He's trying to do space opera, but threw in things to make it a little bit more different, like not entirely cliche, but also things that work better for role-playing. Because like the thing where it's a mercenary crew, he's like, a lot of space opera is military and has a very specific chain of command, which means situations like role-playing games where you sort of consult each other to come up with a decision don't work in pure space opera, because like somebody's in charge and they make the decisions. So a little bit of sort of Firefly mixed in, I guess, but we'll see how it actually plays out. The Gumshoe system is based on it's an investigation type play based on the idea that your investigation skills always work, because it's not fun to play a game where you're searching for clues and then don't find them. So in this game, anytime they have to come up with how they're using their skill, but then it works and they get the clues. Now, what they do with them and how they interpret them is their own thing. Man, people really like calling for me during this show. It wasn't for me this time?
I don't know.
I am deep into season 3 of 12 Monkeys. And I'll be honest, it's starting to annoy me.
Mm.
It's the two protagonists are so humorless. Like it's still so intense, and it's doing the thing that these shows do to try and keep you interested, where everybody is switching sides every episode. Friends become enemies, and then enemies are friends again, and then they're not. And meanwhile, we've got some good like comedic action people, and we've had a couple episodes that emphasize them, and I loved that. But our primary characters, no pun intended for those who know the show, are just so dour, and I'm sick of it. I'm like, give me the crazy kind of psychic lady and the sociopath who shoots everything, and just make them do like a road trip show, and I would watch the shit out of that. But I'm tired of the rest of these, but I'm plowing through. We're still really digging Kim's Convenience. If people are looking for just a fun light show where, you know, half hour episodes, so you can just watch them when you don't have a lot of time, I still recommend it. We're really enjoying it. And we're getting into it. Like, we're quoting lines at each other or like talking about it when we're not watching it and stuff. It's pretty fun. And we watched a movie last night. We watched Vampires versus the Bronx.
Mm.
We've been waiting for this movie. We saw the trailer and we're very excited. It is a brilliant sort of action horror comedy thing in that it has a brilliant premise. The premise is, you know, gentrification. What if instead of just wealthy white people, they were actually vampires?
Aren't they though?
That's the thing. But it's like, what if they were literally? And that's the thing, you're watching this, you're like, oh, I love this. And it's a great premise. It's a pretty weak movie. Like, it's fine to watch. It's an hour and 25 minutes. I enjoyed it. I had fun. I laughed. I followed along. But it's not covering any real new territory. The writing is okay. The acting is okay. The editing is okay. It's fine. The premise carries a long way. The premise, I just loved the idea. Because it literally is like this real estate company is coming in and buying up places and stuff, and people are disappearing, and you know, and then it turns out it's actual vampires. I mean, spoilers for a movie called Vampires versus the Bronx, but there you are. So yeah, it's, I mean, somebody came up with this great idea and then clearly gave it to other people who just wanted to make a movie quickly, but it's fun. So you can check that out. Also, speaking of Haunting of Hill House, currently free with Amazon Prime right now. It hadn't been, but it is, I guess, maybe as of October. I don't know. The riff tracks of the old Vincent Price House on Haunted Hill is available. I have been watching that. It is funny. And it's a great classic Vincent Price movie. And it's way better than the remake they did a few years ago with Jeffrey Rush and I forget who else. They even made a sequel to that one. I don't know. But anyway. I think that's all I got going on. I mean, that was a lot of stuff. I've been tired. I haven't been sleeping real well. Slept good last night, but I'm still really tired today. The wife's back at the office. I talked about that a little bit last week, but she's there. She was there for 3 days this week, and now she's home today, and she'll be home tomorrow. It's taking some getting adjusting to. I think she's enjoying it because getting her out of the house and up and about and doing stuff, and she gets to see people again. It's a little tricky because not everyone who's come back has the same level of concern for Yeah, and so she's really having to sort of stake her ground on that. But I think she's doing okay. Some idiot, maybe her boss, I don't know. Somebody invited her to a group lunch. And I'm like, what would that even look like? And there's no version of that that's not a bad idea. She's like, yeah, no, I said no immediately. I'm like, but who? What are they doing? No. So, but my wife's smart. She's doing good with it. Yeah, we should probably draw something. Yep. People have really been writing in, and that's good of them.
Yeah, good.
So this from Stu. What did you do during the great power outage of August 10th, 2020? I cried a lot.
Did you?
No, I never cry. I try and cry. I'm not good at crying. Something has been instilled in me that when my brain says cry, my body's like, nope, we don't do that. But I was very unhappy. It was a very, very hard time for me. I am weak. 3 days without power was rough. And it wasn't even three full days. It was like 2 days and 19 hours. Felt real long. Was very depressed.
I mean, what, like, because you weren't able to, like, what?
Because I was constantly too hot because I couldn't watch any TV. I couldn't do anything on the internet. I basically, all we had was reading. And I had the Kindle for that and I had charged it up and everything, but just hot and sweaty and just the lack of, it was just a big part of what defines my environment was gone.
Yeah.
It was purely a creature comforts. It just disappeared. And, you know, food was weird and we didn't go hungry. But we didn't have it in the house or anything because the fridge was gone. And yeah, almost everything I do uses electricity. And almost all of that uses an internet connection.
Now, my power came back before yours, isn't that right?
Way before. Yeah, you got yours back. Like I said, 2 days and 19 hours. We were lucky in that apparently our internet never went, because as soon as the power was back on, the internet was back. So we were more fortunate than I know people whose power came back and it was like a week later before they got their internet back.
Yeah, as I recall it, it went out fairly early and it came back in the middle of the night or something that night. I want to say, I don't think we
did.
And the only issues we had, or that seemed to bother both of us, was we didn't have hot water, which probably bothered me more than it bothered my wife.
Oh, because you have electric. See, because we never were out of hot water because we have gas.
So that, we didn't like that. I didn't like that.
I was incredibly thankful that we had that.
Because
I'll tell you, taking a long hot shower is really helpful for my psyche.
I mean, it was hot in the house, but I mean, I don't know. You know, growing up without air conditioning, we've had this happen before where the air will go out or the electricity will go out or something. And we did have the air go out this summer also, and had to have someone come out and fix it. But it's like, it's uncomfortable, but even though it's been, you know, 30 years since I lived at home, it also feels really familiar. So it bothered me that much. Also being without internet and television, you know, it's like, we'll just do other things. So it didn't bother me that much, I guess. But now, again, to be fair, I didn't have to deal with it for less than 24 hours, really. Who knows? If I'd have had a couple days or 3 days. And the food thing was a real, we didn't want a lot of food to go to waste. And we only had a little bit of it that did. So that would have probably not felt very good if that happened. But we only had to
a lot of food.
We only lost basically the meat that we had, which my wife eats meat, so that wasn't really a lot of food. So it was mostly the bothersome thing of it, outside of the fact of not having hot water, which I don't know why that bothers me so much. But most of the issue was just not knowing when it was going to come back. That was just the anticipation that we could be a week without, because you know, that means that she couldn't work for that whole week. You know, what was that going to be like? It meant that, you know, we would eventually be only getting food from, like, I don't know, restaurants or something, but could the restaurants keep bringing us food if they didn't have power? You know, things like that. That's, we just didn't know how it was going to work to be a week without power. And some people were that long without power.
It was so much worse in Cedar Rapids.
Yeah. So it was mostly the anticipation that was a problem rather than the actual going through for us, the relatively small amount of time. And I did feel terrible for the people that had to do it for longer, because I think that would be really hard.
And it was, I mean, because to a certain degree, my hope was up in the beginning. It went out around 1:30 in the afternoon. And in the Midwest, they're good with this. Back home in Oregon, the power doesn't go out as often. But if it does, you're stuck for a while. Mm. But in the Midwest, they're so used to storms and things that, like, it goes out at least once a year, but it's usually back within a few minutes.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't really worried. And then it's going on, I'm like, wow. And then at a certain point, I'm like, it'll probably come on in the middle of the night or something. And then it didn't. And we wake up the next day, and it's like, and at that point, it starts becoming this thing of, like, how long will it be?
Yeah.
If you told me it was by the end of the day, that wouldn't be so bad. But I don't know if it was. And then we had another night with that. I'm like, what is happening? Like, I don't. And at that point, it just becomes very sort of fatalistic. Like, if we don't have it tomorrow, I don't know how I'll do, you know?
It's really frustrating when something like that happens and you just have no idea when it's going to end. Because another thing is it's, one of the reasons it's so stressful not to know is because, you know, you might do things differently depending on, you know, like, well, if I know it's going to come back overnight and it's going to be less than 24 hours, I probably don't have to worry about anything in the refrigerator, but I shouldn't open it at all. Right.
Yeah.
If I know it's going to be 3 days,
I should eat some of that
stuff. I should probably eat some of that stuff. That's right. I mean, and that's just one thing. There's lots of things you might think that you should do if you know it's going to be a week versus if it's only going to be a couple days or whatever. But you can't do those things.
Like when we went to ACT's offices, somebody came in and they're like, I heard most of the east side of Iowa City has it back now. And I was like, oh, so maybe we do. So when it was time for lunch, I had to drive by our house to see if maybe it had come back, but it hadn't. And so then I was incredibly mad at the person who had said that, even though they didn't tell me my power had come back on. But
yeah, it's you just don't know what to do.
And there's there's a total loss of control. You have no impact on it. You can't do anything to make it go faster or anything like that.
Yeah, and as you also pointed out, since a lot of things that, even if you decided, all right, well, it's just going to be off for a while, I'll just do something. Your options compared to your life usually, which can, like you said, includes a lot of things that include electricity, are not available to you. So yeah, you can read. There are things you can do, but it's like, it's a big change and you don't know when it's going to end. And it's all up to a power company who, if you call them, they'll just say, we don't know when this is going to be fixed.
And
it's like,
no, and we had the app and we were doing that.
Yeah, checking. Very, very frustrating.
And that just tells you how many. It's like, okay, am I in that? I must be.
Yeah.
No, it was bad. And it just, again, shows me, like, I am whatever the opposite of a doomsday prepper is. That's me. Like, you can ruin me just having by the internet go out for a couple days. Even if the power's all still on and everything. Especially now, because all of our TV is streaming.
Well, I felt like this household is pretty adaptable. And it was just that, can we go ahead and get on with adapting? Or is it going to, is there no point in doing that? I mean, Here's another thing. For us, if we knew somehow it was going to be a week, we could pick up and go somewhere else. I mean,
yeah. Well, and that was an impact all around, because I had people who, I knew people who never lost power.
Yeah.
And if it weren't for COVID, I would be spending a lot of time with them.
Sure. But I mean,
they would be inviting us over for the day. Heck, they might be inviting us to come spend the night there because they had air conditioning and everything. But it was COVID, so we couldn't do it.
For us, though, I mean, Dad spends most of his time in his wife's house now, which means there's an empty house that had power 100 miles away that we could go to. And since my wife's working remotely anyway, she probably could have done her job from there.
Yeah.
That was an option, but not something we're going to do if the power's just going to come back.
Well, the next day. And were you us, that would have been a good idea. Being you, if you'd done that, that would have been stupid. Like, you would have gotten there and settled, and then the next day, oh, your power's back.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But so that's the thing. But also, had you been us, that would be great. Although we have the cats to take care of and all that, and the cats were really confused as well. So you have no idea.
Yep, and that's just the worst part of it.
So it was terrible, Stu. Thank you for bringing up these horrific memories. Tell us how you did during the blackout of in Iowa in August 10th of 2020, especially you international listeners. I want to hear what you were doing.
Honestly, I don't know if I can tell you how.
I haven't frozen up. I'm just trying to increase.
Since our power came back overnight, most of the time we spent in that afternoon was just talking about what we were going to do, how we were going to do it, what needed to be done. So I don't think the power was off long enough for us to go, okay, so how are we going to spend our time together in the dark? Basically, I don't think we really even had to think about that.
We didn't do that too much either. Here's what happened all the time. I read on my Kindle, read to Trish from my Kindle, slept. That was it the whole time. When I got bored with one of those things, I would do another one of those things. Now, the next day after it started, Trish went to her work for a little while and she charged up a lot of devices. And so I just slept while she was there. And then the last full day we had, we both went there and had air conditioning, electricity, and internet. So that day I just played on my devices and things, and I bought a new mobile game and was playing that and just hung out. But when I was home, reading to myself, reading to Trish, or sleeping all the time.
Yeah, I don't remember specifically what we did, because I think there was just a lot of consideration as to what we needed to do to prepare for the power to be out for a long.
Yeah, I don't do that.
It happened in the afternoon, so it wasn't it wasn't like a whole bunch of hours before you could just say go to bed, you know, yeah, and see what happens. So I don't think we did anything particular, you know, to pass the time, because we just didn't, we weren't out of power that long, really.
Yeah. You got it easy, punk. All right. If you'd like to know more about power outages, visit your local library. All right. To almost every one of you listening, be prepared. Saturday, 3 p.m., we're going to do this thing. 500th episode. It's going to be amazing. So amazing. Are you pumped?
Believe it.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. What are we doing with our lives?
I don't know.
If you'd like to join the 500th episode and haven't already been invited, it's really kind of late to the game. But if you get a hold of me, I might be able to hook you up. We'll see. Otherwise, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us how you feel about how easy William had it in the thing. Or how much you care about how many different horror stories were actually entwined in the one horror story in The Haunting of Hill House. Or whether you watch Kim's Convenience. Only those things. Those are the only things you should talk about. Don't talk about any other things.
Wait, is it Turn of the Screw or Turning of the Screw? Turn of the Screw, right?
Turn of the Screw.
Oh, just Turn of the Screw. Okay. It's weird. I've read it, but I can never remember. I always get that mixed up.
I think it might even be... No, it's not even The. It's just Turn of the Screw.
Yeah. I think that's right. It's a good story. People should read it.
Too late. It's a TV show now. All right. The rest of you, as near as I can tell, remaining one of you who won't be recording the podcast episode, will just have to wait till next week. So we will see you then. You know who you are. Bye-bye. Man, my hair is really...
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.